take these off, I can't read with them anymore. Right, first poem was one I wrote at a jazz gig. I like writing poems about events while I'm there and performing them at the end of the event. It's called Tribute. Instrument and voice converse as streams of contained consciousness rip to boundaries, returning always to the core. The rip, the rhythm and the phrases that pump the blood around the body of the band, wave upon wave continuing to ride the crest of sound. There's something about live jazz. The body beats. The double bass, diaphragm deep, impossible not to move, to stand, to feel the music. It's every part packed potential, a story for the soul. Balloon bouncing, lifted and reflected from the listening crowd, back and forth between instruments on the stage. There's something about live jazz. The ballad, slow and languorous. A cold drink in hot summer, soaring in unsearched corners of the psyche to stoke feelings diaphanous or frenzied fire. The lyrical leaps of faith as the outside real world tedium and tumult sinks forgotten, beaten, wire thin, piercing the moment. Sustaining and uplifting other, never recreated save as shadows in memories or recordings. There's something about live jazz. I understand I've got 5 minutes. I think I'll get 3 medium and a very short one. Second poem is called Nursery Rhymes Updated for the Aughties. Mary had a quite contrary lamb. He butted the tuffet of Little Miss Muffet, did his business in Little Jack Horner's corner, who got a shock when he tried a small plum on his thumb. The three little piggies have a kosher butcher's with a halal counter, catering for all the nursery characters' fates. It's all V5O Rabbi and Florence in a yashmak on the magic roundabout. Cardinal Johnny Stout, his hair grown longer, no longer hangs out with Johnny Flynn, who won't stop playing with Pussy and his dinner. Jack Spratt and his wife are separated because of their irreconcilable differences, though they still eat together for convenience. Barbar Black Sheep has dyed and cropped his hair Mohican styling. He wants to be leader of the herd, but they don't make Levi's in his size. Goldilocks skivvies for the three bears, and Little Red Riding Hood now lives with the wolf in her grandmother's cottage. Sleeping Beauty will never wake up. Her prince has come out and lives in San Francisco with the woodcutter. They both work as lumberjacks in rough plaid and Monty Python styling, sin. Sing, sing. Here's one called Material Things. I don't wear branded clothes anymore. A crocodile, restless on my chest, bit my nipple and attacked the penguin on my vest. The Nike tip cut down the mulberry and made a start on Timberland. I couldn't hack it. My camel had the hump and the Marlboro man on my waistcoat burst into flame. No smoke without fire trap. My Pierre Duc Cardin got swiped and I was seriously Dolce and Gabbana. Doc Martin diagnosed a change of sock off the bench and into Pringle check by Burlington. I said, hush puppies, red or dead, you could be caterpillars. My boating sunk and my Jimmy Choos went blarnik on me. Manolo knows when they'll come to heel. New man thinks my Russell's Bromley and I'm Jasper Conrad. I struggled just to keep abreast of all the things on others' chests. and a very short one, the last, called Crying. Yesterday, you rang back to say sorry. After you hung up, I cried. I'd waited so long to hear the word, but never thought so little could mean so much.
Thanks very much, Simon. And the next person is... Oh, it's me. I did this poem in Limerick when I was in Limerick, and they liked it so much they asked me to do it again. So, how bad. But it was actually written 30 years ago in Scotland. When I came to Ireland, it was like deja vu. Come get a mortgage. Houses built from cardboard with garages stuck on. You're a bunch of silly fuckers and you're all being conned. Never mind that. Come and get a mortgage, that's the Barrett way. Not built for tomorrow, just thrown up today. Nigel bought a wimpy house, he thought he was tough. The day the guarantee ran out, the fucking doors fell off. Never mind that. Come get a mortgage, dance the Barrett way. Not built for tomorrow, just thrown up today. So Johnny had a party. He invited all his kith and kin. And when he started dancing, the fucking floor fell in. But never mind that. Come and get a mortgage, dance the Barrett way. Not built for tomorrow, just thrown up today. 10-year building guarantee. Do you know one of the biggest house building, home building companies in Scotland is called Hassle Homes. What do you get when you buy a Hassle Home? Loads of fucking hassle. Never mind that. Come and get a mortgage. Dance the Barrett way. Not built for tomorrow, just thrown up today. Hey. Thank you very much. Next up on the open mic, Mr. Grant March.
This is a short story. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm just going to read a few minutes of it, maybe 3 or 4 minutes. It's called A Traveller, but it's not an Irish traveller. It's a traveller, someone who goes on a journey. The traveller was being strangled. Thick, coarse ropes of conformity wrapped themselves around his body. Like a snake, they squeezed tight. Every time he breathed or gave way, the iron coils would muscle in, taking up any slack. They cut into his flesh tightly, so that not only was his freedom restrained, but he could feel his skin split, and his very lifeblood began to flow in warm trickles across his body. The bright streams then formed shiny globules, which became heavier and heavier until they dropped, and one by one, another of his dreams splattered against the cold concrete of normality. His ideas had been outlawed by intangible thought guardians who were so powerful that already, before the traveller had become a young man, they buried parts of his mind deep down in a sterile coffin, suppressed beneath the foundations of society. His own experiences never to be discovered and enjoyed. When he walked through his village, the traveller could feel the stare of the other villagers, pulling him down, dragging him back with their ordinary expectations. Life was treading a long, ancient path of wisdom that had been walked countless times before by every inhabitant of the village. Many footsteps had worn away the earth, so the path had become a deep gully, dry and cracked, rock hard and devoid of vegetation. Now, when young men and women set out on the journey of life, they were guided into the gully. The gully was long and narrow, occasionally winding, but there was only one way forward. The path creeped up upon itself, so that those travelling upon it never actually went anywhere. It was an infinitely long journey with an unknown destination. This was the only path known to the people of the village, and they walked it without question. The soles of their feet dug deeper and deeper into the crusty emptiness called tradition. The traveller had been born and bred into this small town of reality. When he was small, he'd been a happy child, his mind overflowing with imagination. But that was before he had lost the protection of the innocence of youth. For when he was deemed to be young, he was free to express his fountain of creativity. People who came in touch with the fresh spray of this fountain accepted it as the playfulness of a young spring, knowing that the rocky crevices would ultimately guide the flow. He eagerly painted ginormous tapestries colored with rainbow light and fantasy form, and gurgled them through his developing speech to those around him. In each incredible image, there was a theme of unleashed joy flowing freely between its characters and his innermost heart. The traveller was a living part of his dreams. But as the traveller grew up, he became aware of a growing hostility towards him. People who had never appreciated his bubbling enthusiasm could no longer ignore him. They began to believe that the traveller might not grow out of his joyful antics. The faint realization that they had chosen their own mundane life paths began to threaten them. They started to tell the traveller that he was no longer a child and that the real way of the world was along the gully path. His ideas were challenged by the overpowering forces of tradition, and he was obliged to conceal his true self, cramped and crunched in the cobweb corners of his mind. The traveller bowed his head and walked into the Library of Education. Here he was guided at random to pick up a compulsory sack filled with huge tomes of old learning. He heaved this huge dead weight upon his back and began to tramp the gully path. For several years he trudged along, the burden getting bigger and heavier as he went. The other inhabitants of the village made approving noises as they watched the traveller toil. Sometimes when the long hot sun was beating down and the traveller's sweat was running into his dust-clogged eyes, his fingers numb with the clenched effort of holding onto the sack of promises, he nearly forgot himself and almost accepted the reality that had been created for him. His heart, mind and body were all anesthetized from his true being. But luckily for the traveller, these moments did not infiltrate his heart core, and his dreams still lurked there in a murky, silent sea of dark, heavy swells and thick black clouds charged with lightning potential. And maybe the next time I'll read the other half of it.
And up to the open mic we have Kimberly Randlow. All right.
This poem is a... It's a set in Barcelona. We will make a fine stew, a broth of albondigas, of rabbit and wine. I am writing this next to the recipe. It will simmer lasciviously, all silken currents, on your battered stove's one good hob. Its pheromones will season the living room and snap the cat's spine into an arc of predation on their wanton way to the balcony. I sit on the balcony and imagine you're coming. You are coming with a tray of tomatoes, mushy worlds, yielding globules, irregular in their skin-straining fleshiness. You sashay through Del Carme's magenta evening, through its narrow crepuscular breathing, past hipsters and immigrants, past dive bars and curry joints, under each watching macho balcony. The fruit that you carry is lividly crimson. The cobbles are almost blue. Overdressed for this desultory Sunday, in flannel, in retro check, in your own best alterations, your absurd heels click on the cobbles. I can hear you approach through the diminishing din. A black hawker beats along his butane can in a happy advertisement toward the square. Or can I hear you? we will listen, wine and band, nourished, to the barrio's awful song. We will make a fine stew. I have peeled 4 yellow onions. I have borrowed this pen from Antonio Gonzalez Gonzalez.
Next to the open mic, Conor McManus.
Thanks, Rob. It's called I Found God. I found God in room 218 of the Imperial Hotel Galway. It was a Monday of the June bank holiday weekend, 1988. After breakfast, to be precise. I had just finished off the pastrami, salami, porridge, peaches and natural yogurt, 3 croissants, 3 cups of coffee, 2 boiled eggs, continental style breakfast, when I was making my way back to room 218 on the second floor overlooking the square. That had been a special request of mine, and I would place a chair by the window and would look down on the heads of Galwegians. But to my chagrin, the lift was bust, and I had to take the stairs. I wasn't enamoured with that after the salami and pastrami, and after 3 pints of Guinness and 5 jimmies from the night before, and a Supermax from next door. After detouring by the women's toilet and down and up 2 cul-de-sacs, I finally found the stairs and came out on the second floor, landing. Bright, spacious, with large windows, looking out over Eyre Square and down on the heads of Galwegians. A number of brown leather couches and a strange man sat on one, invited me to sit with him. He had been reading the Times and said he had a hole in his heart, and I saw 2 drops of blood soaking out through the breast pocket of his white shirt. I said, "You've got a black eye," because he did, and I recognised him as the guy the bouncer wouldn't let into Supermax because of a cut, no more like a pierce, a burst, just under one eye, streaming blood, and I told him this, and he said he just wanted a burger, is all, which he didn't get. But he would sit with me and hold my hand, and we sat there holding hands for 3 days and 3 nights, looking down on the heads of Galwegians. And nobody came and disturbed us, just hoovered round us. And on the third day, I got hungry and went down for the continental-style breakfast, and afterwards took the same route again, though the lift wasn't bus, by the women's toilet and down and up the 2 cul-de-sacs, until I arrived on the second floor landing. But he was gone. I checked out 3 days late, and I haven't seen the fucker since.
Thank you, Rob. Next we have, to the open mic, Kieran McCart.
Thanks, Lach. This is called How Big Is the Sky? We expect of others what we don't ask of ourselves, and we seldom see in color, and we seldom say a spell. What's crippling our conscience, though we mean to do well, supports a stale system, succumbs to a spell. And you've curbed your ambition, and I've got to ask why. How big is your heart? How big is the sky? Correct me if I'm wrong. Pause for correction. But it has been too long since we've made the connection between the sadness in the streets and the sorrow in reflection. Though in nature our heart beats, in ourselves lies perfection. The crosses have been carved awaiting our next savior, while our children are being starved by our passive behavior. Recreating the past with no vision of the future. How long will we last without a place in nature? Yes, sir. No, sir. 3 bags full, sir. The thinking mind left behind hardly makes a whimper. Though they have kept us blind, they can't suppress a thinker. Perhaps in time we will find we ought to more than tinker. We could escape our daily grind. We could recreate our state. We could strive for an ideal. We could rely less on fate. Act on every why, allow our children to feel. Stand for their potential, not forcing them to kneel. Make honor consequential, make self-fulfillment real. Thank you.
Okay. Last to the open mic, unless there's any more victims, is Daw.
Yeah. I was delighted to see Tom Atchison here tonight. I got him to sign one of his cartoons that I cut out of Sunday Tribune. And I looked at the date, it was 1986. And I was kind of sad to see Billy Ramsell reading from home. I hope he's not talking from onset.
Already onset dementia, yeah.
Anyway, this thing is called Ode to a Pint of Murphy's. The reason it's called that is because I drink Beamish these days, I can't afford Murphy's. When the old doll nags me, and the work it shags me, and the feeling in my belly is full of doubt, in a matter of seconds, the high stool beckons to an achingly desired pint of Murphy's stout. When my back is aching from an hour of raking, and my big toe clinches from a pinch of gout, I hightail nightly, albeit unsprightly, to the high counter on the Murphy stove. With the kids all screaming and no chance of dreaming by the log fire which has just gone out, my heart starts throbbing and the hobnails hobbing down the dark road to the pint of stove. When I'm sometimes thinking about seldom drinking and overcoming the present awful drought, nothing else matters, including bats and batters, but the foamy head of the Black Murphy stove.